Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much. Hey, Wonder Fam, welcome back to Allison's Wonderland. I'm Allison Packard, and today's guest is animation writer and producer Josie Campbell. Oh my God, we have known each other for well over a decade since our days at Emerson College, and today we are going to chat all about Josie's new animated TV show, Adventures with Superman. Join me in giving a warm welcome to Josie Campbell.
Josie!
Allison!
Josie and the Pesica.
We're here!
Wow, we're finally here.
I know.
And we go way back.
Yeah.
I was trying to think. I think we probably met in like 2007 or 2008.
Yeah, when I came out for the Emerson program. Mm-hmm. And you were there working as the RD, right?
Yes,
yeah,
I was the RD at Emerson.
Yeah.
And you were one of my students.
Yes.
But it was cool because I remember especially like 2007, 2008, like those early years. I think 2007 might have been my first year.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I was still fresh out of college.
Yeah.
It just felt like I got to go back to college.
Yeah, in a way. We're like, yeah, our friend Allison is here and also she works for the college. Like these are the two things. Yeah.
It was a great job for an aspiring actor because it was flexible and then I'd work weekends.
Yeah, you could take off. Yeah, but
my work was like, take you guys to Six Flags. Disneyland.
Yeah. Explain to us how the highways work.
Yes. Like,
yeah, exactly. We did it. Yeah, we're here. Yeah.
And now your career has just completely flourished.
Mm-hmm.
You are producing and have been writing and head writer on some of my personal favorite shows of the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so excited to celebrate you and
dive into
your career and all you've done.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
And boom, brand new project.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us all about Superman.
So My Adventures with Superman is coming out July 6th it's actually going to premiere at midnight on Adult Swim. And then the very next day, and they've been doing this for a lot of the Cartoon Network shows, it will then be on the Toonami block and also on Max. So if you don't catch it at midnight, you can catch it the very next day on streaming, basically.
Over and over again.
And I believe we're dropping them one a week. So it's like real TV again, rather than a streaming binge.
That's good, though.
Yeah.
You gotta wait for it. It just gets you excited.
Exactly. It's very exciting. Exciting. It's what I think I was telling you, it's what I've been working on for the past three and a half years.
Wow.
We started, like, I was writing the pilot for the first episode in development in like end of 2019. And
I
then,
remember we had coffee at some point.
Right after the first wave of
COVID.
Oh my God. Yeah, I think it was either early COVID or like that first wave. We're like, maybe the world will be fine. And we made the show during a lot of COVID. So.
Now this is kind of a little bit of a different take on Superman and his world.
So it's the idea is that it's Superman, Lois Lane, and Jimmy Olsen are not quite the icons we know yet. They're starting out. It's their very first day at the Daily Planet. They're there as interns and they're figuring out who they want to be, including Clark Kent, who we've done, like, I don't want to get too much into it because I want people to be surprised, but there's some twists on his origins now of he's a little bit more unsure of himself. He's a little less, you know, the like a gung-ho guy who knows exactly where he came from and what he's doing. And which has been fun because Jack Quaid voices him and Jack is like just nails Clark Kent. Like he's got great comedic timing and he is like really good at kind of doing the bumbling Clark Kent. Like, oh, I'm so sorry, miss. But then gets into the Superman of it, which is really fun. And then the other thing that's sort of different about this one is when we pitched this, we kind of pitched this as to everybody as it's a rom-com with punching. So the love, the growing like love interest and the growing sort of like relationship between Lois and Clark is exactly as important in the show as the supervillains, as the like world, as the superpowers. Like every episode has some sort of like you know, comedy of errors or rom-com like thing, mm-hmm. element, trope to it, as well as, and he's becoming Superman.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's about identity and finding yourself and falling in love with Lois Lane.
I mean, who isn't in love with Lois?
She's the best. Yes, exactly.
So you've been with this project since the very beginning, even, or some of the early days.
Some of the early days, yeah, because I'm running it with my pals, Brendan Claher, who worked with me on She-Ra, actually. He was one of the board artists and our like pinch hitter to come in to draw things. Mm. And then our pal, Jake Wyatt, who I haven't worked with him before. Like, we've known each other from like comics and friendship and things. Mm-hmm. And so they're artists and they had drawn a bunch of pictures and were the ones going in to originally pitch it to Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And because Brendan loved working with me and Jake loved the stuff that I'd done at She-Ra, they're like, come make this with us. And at first I was like, I don't know, like I'm still working on Jurassic World, Camp Cretaceous.
Which I definitely want to talk about that.
Yeah. But then like I hit a point where like I was like about to be sort of done with like, you know, my contract on that and what I was doing. And I was like, oh yeah. Like, are you guys still interested? And they're like, hell yeah, let's do it. So yeah, I finished Jurassic and went over to Warner Brothers and I've been working on Superman since.
Wow. Well, we are so excited for Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, you take something that, I mean, Superman is America.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like 39? Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you know, he's cited as like the first superhero, which is like, you know, there were, you know, comic book characters that had, you know, costumes or they had like deals before, like you had the Shadow and stuff like that. But like, he's the first one that has superpowers. Yeah, he's flying. He's jumping in the 30s really far. He's punching out things. He's outrunning locomotives.
Oh,
yeah.
So the flying came later?
The flying came later, actually. There was a lot of stuff that got added later, which is very fun.
Wow. So for research, did you go back? And first of all, I mean, do you even know how many episodes of comics there are? Like how many issues?
There's so many. There's so many. Yeah.
Is it five figures?
I'm sure. Yeah, well, because like whatever. Where Action Comics is on issue.
Almost 100 years.
Yeah, 900 or so right now. Like, it's so much. So because there's so much, like, when we pitched this, we were pitching it based on the stuff that kind of influenced us as kids. Mm-hmm. So, which was the Richard Donner movie with Margot Kidder as Lois Lane.
Uh-huh.
And then, honestly, like, the stuff that was coming out in the 90s when we were kids, which is, like, you know, you have the death of Superman with, like, John Bogdanov drawing things and Dan Jurgens writing.
Old.
I know. Get Cal's dad in here.
I should get him on the show.
Oh, my God. He would love to do it, I'm
sure. Side tangent. Cal is another Emersonian. And his dad, Kevin.
Yeah, his dad drew on the Death of Superman arc. So
fun.
But yeah, so that stuff, the John Byrne stuff, some of the stuff from, like, the 90s influenced us. And then we actually watched a lot of the 1940s Fleischer cartoons that are all rotoscoped because they're like one of the first like visual media representations of Superman, and also Lois Lane in that is awesome.
So Lois, talk to us a little bit about Lois Lane and her role in this.
Yeah. So Lois is like a co-protagonist. Like one of the things we wanted to do is Lois, Jimmy, and Clark are our three characters. It's not just Superman alone. Like it's the three of them, they're best friends. They're coming together. They're a team.
Uh-huh.
But Lois specifically, like we really loved the 1940s Fleischer cartoons,
uh-huh.
where she's so full of like vim and vinegar, and she's like, like she's gonna get her story no matter what. So like, you know, a building's collapsing and she's running into the building to get the story. Like there's an episode where she's getting chased on a train
That's
by gangsters.
Like me on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. You run in. Yeah.
Wait.
Hey, here we are, just jumping into the back of my van to get to get an interview.
Get
yeah, exactly. But yeah, like she was so go-getting.
Mm.
And that was like our concept for Lois. And this Lois is like, she's super ambitious and she's openly ambitious. She wants to be a reporter and she wants to be the best reporter ever. She wants to break the story first. She wants to get there first. She wants to help Superman. And Alice Lee plays Lois and she is absolutely phenomenal. Like she does such a great job hitting the like really highs of Lois's kind of manic energy where she's like, all right, well, I'm going to go get captured. And if I'm kidnapped, then I can get the story and et cetera, et cetera. But like also does a really good job working off of Jack. And like, truly, I believe the two of them, even though they've never met, are in love. Like it's incredible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so how did the casting process go down?
Yeah. So the casting process, it's funny because the cast has a lot more sort of bigger names than I thought you would get, just because I think a lot of people are very excited about the fact that it's Superman.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, so the casting process, worked a little bit, I think, differently than a lot of other cartoons, because like one of the things we were trying to do is cast for like a more natural sounding voice. Like we do have like actors who can do multiple voices and things, but it was always like in the realm of if this like act like this is a live grounded, action show, it's very grounded. Cinematic. Exactly. It's very cinematic, very much that feel of like, this could have been live action. It's animation, like in terms of the acting. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, listened to a ton of different voices. Mm-hmm. Like we reached out to like almost a ton of people. And yeah, but like it came down to, I think, which a lot of people do is like putting up a picture of Superman and a picture of Clark Kent.
Uh-huh.
And then listening to the voices. And then of everybody, we're like, holy, holy cow. Like Jack Quaid sounds the way he looks. Uh-huh, like, uh-huh. And sort of the same thing with Alice, which was, you know, we were like listening to a bunch of different voices, a bunch of incredible people mm-hmm. auditioned for us. But like, again, we like put up the picture of Lois and we're like, yeah, I buy that. Like, that's the bubbliness. That's the excitement. That's the everything. Yeah. So, I mean, and again, like, I think we listened to hundreds of auditions. There was so many, like, even when it was like whittled down through casting, there mm-hmm. were so many people and casting was like, and this person would be good. And this person would be good. This person would be good. And again, it was just like, I think we got so many wonderful actors coming in and trying is because Superman. It's Superman and Lois Lane. It's legendary. It's iconic. It's the first time we've had an animated Superman since 96, like the 90s.
Wow. Is that true? It's, wow.
Yeah. No, the 96 Superman, the animated series was the last animated Superman until like right now with us, which is crazy. So
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Like there's always a Batman, but like, you know, I think Superman's special. Yeah.
Special. Yeah. 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 There's like, you can cut, yeah, you get Batman a million different ways to Tuesday.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's the right phrase, but that's
what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this, but mm-hmm. Superman has like this icon status and like specific. So yes. I'm really excited to see what you guys have done with it. Mm-hmm. Was it challenging to take mm-hmm. such a well-known property and kind of mm-hmm. Reinvent it?
I mean, it was a little bit, although like at this point I've been privileged to be, that's sort of been my job with She-Ra, with Camp Cretaceous. So like, I think the difference here was like, you know, I was actively like, rather than just being the head writer, I was actively producing it. So I think some of it was, you know, with She-Ra, you know, Nate was doing a great job, but like had a vision for the show.
Nate Stevenson.
Yeah, yeah. With Jurassic, I did a lot more sort of like development-y stuff. But with this show, there was a lot more talking to DC, talking to, you know, various like parts of Warner Brothers. So there's a lot more franchise. But that being said, everybody was really on board with us trying to modernize him in this way that like, honestly, I think when you watch the show, it still feels very classic Superman.
It takes place in the 2020s.
It takes place in the modern day, which is like contemporary. Okay. Like Metropolis has like, you know, it's the city of tomorrow. It's beautiful. It's green. They have cell phones. They also have little like cleaning Roombas. Like it's our time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I would say I think the hardest thing was just there was not enough space to put in every single Superman reference that we wanted to. Like I
need more seasons.
Yes. No, like we're big Superman geeks. Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, our writer's room was just wall to wall comic books and graphic novels and like pictures. We all watched the movies together. We all watched Terry Hatcher. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dean Cain. It was just really fun.
Wow. And so this time you were taking on a producer role in addition to being
head writer. Yeah.
Head writer.
Yeah.
And managing story.
Mm-hmm.
What are the differences between the two? Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest difference is that you're doing a lot more deciding and you're doing a lot more coordinating between all of the different groups. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, when I was head writer for She-Ra, for Jurassic World, Camp Cretaceous, I was, you know, inviting artists into the writer's room. Like, the writers would come to the animatic screenings. You know, I was giving notes on animatics. But I was not so much a part of the art stuff as much as I was, like, you know, running the room, doing rewrites constantly. Whereas here,
when you're on story, do you mm-hmm. also work very closely with boards and that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because like a lot of times you're redoing rewrites and boards, or you're realizing, oh, this episode's a little long.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need this scene? If there is a bit of information, okay, well, I need to rewrite this bit of information to the scene that's going to stay.
Okay, so that's your job. It comes back, then it comes back to you.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you're taking it in and then coming back on the other swipe.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so like as head writer, like, you know, the writing process kind of never stops. But like as head writer, you know, eventually, like once the scripts are done, you're done. Whereas producer, like once scripts are done, you're still going. You're still
for a lot longer.
And like, you know, again, the writing process doesn't really end because you even get stuff like you get like finished animation back and you realize, oh, I can't really hear what this person is saying. But the lip flap, we can like dub in a slightly different thing to like make it more clear. So like there's, yeah, I would say the biggest difference is like just the writing keeps going. And then you're a lot more involved in, you know, the storyboard handouts. You're a lot more involved with the directors. You know, there's times where I would sit in with the directors during an animatic edit as a producer, where I was also helping them or calling the shots of being like, okay, let's cut this out, but let's move this here. Let's see how this plays. Mm-hmm. Or like coming into, you know, doing a lot of overseeing records. Like we had the wonderful Gene Vassalaros as our voice director, and he's phenomenal. And then I would come in and sit in on those records because, you know, I would know, okay, you know, this scene in the script, it says scared, but we actually drew it differently. Uh-huh. So actually, Jack, if you could do it this way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's just a lot more being a part of the entire show than just, I've just written a script and I've handed it off. And it is your job to like, you know, draw it now. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Do you have a preference?
I love producing. Yeah. It's really fun. I mean, even when I was just head writer, I was very hands-on. Like, you know, I was like definitely still going to like every meeting I could just to make sure I knew what was going on. And they're all serialized shows. So yeah. I want to make sure that like, you know, if we've got a plot line, it's being served. But yeah, being a producer is it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work, but it's so much fun to see an entire production come together see everybody's creativity in every single aspect from like, you know, the actors getting comfortable enough to start ad-libbing things or adding lines or asking about motivation and changing things a little bit in the room to, you know, the board artist being like, we actually have an idea for the sequence and like seeing it come to life. It's just, it's incomparable.
And this production mostly took place during COVID.
Yeah.
So how did that affect production?
So that was, God, COVID was so hard. I'm sure you've talked to people about it before.
Mainly from the voice standpoint. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious to hear because this is such a big production and you kind of, if we're starting in 2019.
Oh, yeah.
You're reinventing the wheel. You and I had coffee once. I remember we were kind of getting into it. But tell our audience a little bit about what that was like.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was very hard because in a lot of ways, animation never stopped. Mm. Like we got the, you know, call that, you know, we had been in the office. We had gotten the call that everybody was going to go home to quarantine for 2 weeks on like a Thursday. I know. We got that call on like a Thursday, packed up our stuff. Friday, everybody was on Zoom working from home. So like, unlike live action where like they were figuring things out or there was like work stoppages, it never stopped. It just instantly moved over to working from home. And some parts of it were not too bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of the way I've run things before is a little hybrid where it's like, if you're writing on script, you don't have to be in the office. You can do that wherever. Like if you're drawing, you can do that wherever. What was hard was actually brainstorming things in the writer's room because like, it's just so hard to talk on Zoom and have a real conversation and not one where everybody's kind of like, oh, did you say something? Did you say something? Mm. Like it just was twice as hard to like come up with ideas because you don't want to interrupt people. You're getting burned out because you're tired of looking at a screen all day. Mm-hmm. And then anytime there was like, you know, we needed to like to have a creative meeting, it was a little harder just because it's easier to bounce things off of people in person. It's always easier to like, you know, you read their body language. You can like, you know, start drawing something and like show it to others. Mm-hmm. You can start writing something on a board. So it was doable. Everything was just a little bit harder. But again, our crew like was incredible. Like they didn't drop like a stitch. They didn't drop a beat. Like as soon as we were back on Zoom and doing everything, like we would do big Zoom meetings where we invite everybody to watch the animatics. And then afterwards, everybody would be on the chat, like making jokes and making memes. We had a big Slack channel, essentially, nice. Where like people would like post their favorite Superman media and we'd talk about it. So it was, there's some people that I've never met in person that has worked on the show, which is crazy, funny. But yeah.
You guys need to have a party.
We need to have a party, yeah.
Well, and so as you're going through this process, how many people would you say are working on the show?
Boy, I'm trying to like do the math in my head. I mean, basically about altogether, I think about 60 people, mm-hmm. because you've got the three storyboard directors. They have teams of three board artists with like two to three revisionists. We've got three animatic editors. We've got about, my writer's room was three staff writers. And then we also had three floating freelance writers that we would bring in to break extra episodes. So yeah, I think when I was like looking at, I think the full crew list for like, we're getting ready to do some t-shirts for everybody. I was like, yeah, it's about 60 or so people. And that doesn't,
which is kind of a tight.
Yeah.
Kind of a tight.
Yeah. Like, and it doesn't necessarily include the, like, you know, the executives too, or like, you know, some of the, there's like a lot of extra post people. Like, I'm sure mm-hmm. like the actual answer is probably like 100 people mm-hmm. altogether have like touched this and worked on this. But yeah, the crew itself was very tight. And it was a lot of people that we had worked with before. Like, there was a lot of She-Ra people. There was Jurassic people. Like, it was a lot of, like, honestly, like, friends that we brought in, which was fantastic.
That's amazing.
Hey guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
And so prior to this, you were working on one of my favorite animated shorts. It was a show my son and I got deep into COVID, which is Camp Cretaceous.
Yeah.
And I just love that show so much. It feels so fresh and original. Like, I mean, yeah, I can tell you're like a younger person in some ways because there's something that you're doing. I can't quite put my finger on it. That it just feels really on the pulse
animation. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, She-Ra, and I'm sure we'll see with Superman too, but there's this really kind of like, it's smart and it's forward thinking, but it's also like fun and funny.
Yeah.
I know. I was actually just thinking back. Do you remember when we did the Hollywood Fringe
Festival? It was Armageddon and Armageddon, A Night of Laughs and Pleasant Songs.
Yes. So explain it to her.
Yeah. So we did way back, I think 20.
Was there music? It was a musical.
It was
right?
Musical was a variety show.
An original musical.
Yeah. So it's me and actually my friend.
I was one of your actors. Yes. Yes. Emerson Kidd.
Yeah. It was like me and Mike Pisson, who works on Robot Chicken. Yeah. Yeah. I had co-written it because I was directing it.
Forget him being a part of that.
Yeah, because it was like I think all of the practices were in my studio apartment.
Yes.
Like everybody got to really know what my bed looked like.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like I remember your window, you had those high windows.
Yes.
From this, like, the first floor basement apartment.
Yeah. It was like semi below ground. Yeah. It was a variety show where it was like the apocalypse has happened and everybody has come together to this like this shelter. And yeah, we were doing a variety show to be like, here's like tips on how to survive the apocalypse. We had my friends Rachel and Two like helped me write the songs. And we were like, yeah, we had the musical and the skits. It was so fun.
Oh, that was so fun. Did you get like a Best of Fringe thing?
I don't know, but we did sell out both nights and like got to do an extra night or something. Cause yeah, we sold out like every performance, which was so fun. So.
Oh my God, that was fun.
Oh my God,
I miss those days of just like a bunch of people getting together and making something for free.
Yes.
And, you know,
yeah. We're like, we're all excited. Yeah.
That's a good thing too.
Yeah. No, but it was really fun to just make things and make things with your friends. So
Well, and so Camp Cretaceous, how did that opportunity kind of come about?
Yeah. So I was at DreamWorks. I was coming to the very end of She-Ra. Like I had just written part one of the 2-part finale and DreamWorks basically, was like, would you like to stay at DreamWorks? I was like, yeah, absolutely. What do you guys have? And they're the ones who are like, you should work on Jurassic World, Camp Cretaceous. And so I met with Scott Kramer, who's the EP of it. Mm-hmm. We like hit it off immediately. Yeah. And like, they brought me into a room and they're like, here's some of these characters. And I like, you know, I
had
just,
they already had.
So they had, so Zach Stentz had come up with the premise and he's, if people are familiar with him, he's fantastic. He wrote like X-Men First Class. He's done a bunch of amazing things. So he'd come up with the premise and the development. But now we were like moving into like, okay, like what's actually the episodes? What's the show? What are we doing? Like, and so that's when I came on And, you know, Scott and I hit it off. I, like, instantly was like, I think this is, like, I was telling him what the characters were. I'm like, I think this is who Brooklyn is. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so my She-Ra job ended on, like, a Friday. And Monday, I moved my offices down and started on Jurassic.
Wow.
So it was just, like, instantly rolling over into the next show. Mm-hmm. But it was fantastic. Like, we pulled together a fantastic writer's room with some incredible writers. I think it was really fun because Colin Trevorrow was really into it. And so he would come, like, every 6 months he would drop in for the writer's room and we would just walk him through what we were doing. And he'd ask us questions about, like, what's Darius up to? What's, you know, Kenji? Oh my God, he's going to do what? So it was just, like, a very fun, even though there was, like, you know, it could have been a show where there's a lot of pressure of, like, my God, get it right. It's such a huge franchise.
Such a huge franchise. But, and was that the first time it had appeared in any kind of animated form?
Or was because there was in the, I think the 80s or, not the 80s, sorry, because the show, the movie's in the 90s. In the late 90s, there was an attempt to do, like, they did, like, an animated pitch with, like, some pitch boards, but it never went anywhere. Okay. So, yeah, it's the first time Jurassic World has shown up in the animated format.
Wow.
And yeah, it would have been very easily like, oh my God, so stressful. But, like, everybody was such a big fan of the movies. And then again,
that,
like,
was writing and working on the show.
Yeah, that was writing and working on the show. Like, we rewatched the...
They hold up.
Yes! And we rewatched the movies over and over. Like, we talked about how much we loved it. And then our main goal was, we want this to feel like the first movie. We want this to feel like these kids are in danger. They could die.
Yeah.
There are adults dying around them.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's holding them together is their, like, friendship and their, like, quick thinking. And yeah, these dinosaurs are terrifying. We're not going to hold back. It's not, we've made best friends with the T-Rex.
And I was, so I guess, what did it come out? 2021?
2020, I think. I'm trying to remember because I remember, it being during, I think the first season came out towards the end of 2020, because I remember being in quarantine because we couldn't meet up to, like, do a premiere party or anything. Oh, so yeah.
I remember watching it with my son. So he was maybe a little bit on, like, maybe five at the time, or maybe six.
Yeah,
and being like, there was a couple of shows he was allowed to watch, like, just with mom. But secretly, I wanted to watch the shows. And that was one of them. And I was like, are you okay with this? Is this okay? Like, there's, like, dinosaurs, like, basically going to eat. You know, without the bad guy grown-ups start getting picked off. And stuff like, are you okay?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, no. I mean, and that was, like, our goal of, like, you know, like, Trevorrow and Spielberg were like, nah, don't hold back. This isn't. Like, it is for kids, but it's not the kiddie version.
Yeah, no. It's so, older. Oh, yeah. Skews older.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I was fairly young when the first movie came out and I watched it as a kid. And, like, I certainly it scarred some people, but I was like, great. I love it. I love the Velociraptors. I love all of this stuff. So, it was embracing that of being like, yeah, people are going to get eaten. It's like, the dinosaurs are real. Yeah.
And so I don't know if it was you that was telling me this or someone else. Maybe it was someone else. But that, like, there is this whole storyline within the Jurassic World and where Camp Cretaceous is kind of, like, before the first movie.
So the first season is kind of, we call it Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead for kids. Because, like, the first season happens at the same time the first Trevorrow Jurassic World takes place. So if you line up the movie with the show.
Okay, so they're on the other side of the island?
Yeah, they're on the other side of the island. So, like, you know, the main park is down here, their camp is up here, and they're trying to get to the boats all the way down. So, like, as the movie's going on, that first movie with, like, the Indominus Rex breaking out and everything, our kids are basically in the background, like, running down. Like, there's points where in the movie the Indominus Rex runs off screen, everybody's like, where is it gone? And the answer is in our show, which is, oh, it's trying to eat our kids right now.
Yeah.
Like, it ran up here and it's trying to eat them, and now it's going to run back here for the finale, and then they're going to get to the docks right as the last boat has left. So we had like a timeline of just being
so
like,
cool.
This is where Indominus Rex is right now. This is where our kids are. This is where, you know, Chris Pratt is right now. This is where our kids are. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Wow. And then, so when, as you work as a story, as head story editor, what is your day to day tasks like, your activity? Like, how does your everyday look?
Yeah. So, I mean, day to day, it's a lot of writing and rewriting. Day to day, you know, we will do what we call breaking story. which is a term that writers use, which means to come up with the story and to break it up into acts and A plots and B plots. Mm-hmm. So we'll spend like a couple of days coming up with a story, being like, okay, this is episode like 7. This is this is episode 8. This is the episode where Ben's going to fall off the monorail. Terrifying.
Like, what just happened?
Yeah.
He's a goner.
He's gone. So yeah, so we.
The old Ben.
Ben is gone. New Ben is here though. New Ben is badass. Rambo Ben is still Rambo here. Ben. Yeah. So yeah, so some of my day is breaking the story with the writers. Some of my day is reading through scripts and giving notes and rewriting with the writers. And then some of my day is then sitting in meetings with the artists or animatics reviews with the artists and giving notes on the story stuff. So like, oh, we actually can't see Bumpy in this scene because Bumpy's run off and disappeared. So we need to like take him out of this, like, you know, animatic or... Oh, we need the characters to have this level of dirt on them at this moment because they've just fallen into mud. So
my son was always like, when do they go to the bathroom?
Never. They can't.
You told me to tell him in the commercial break.
Oh, when the commercial break happens. In between. Yeah. When the show ends and the next show begins, it's in between. It's right then. We just don't catch it. Yeah. But yeah, so day to day is
their clothes are holding up.
Yeah.
How many years are
there? There was like definitely points where like we reset the clothes a little bit. We're like, you know, when the like glamping, like hunting couple comes in, we're like, okay, they took a shower. In between scenes, they took a shower and now their clothes are nice again.
Right. They found it.
But yeah, mainly a lot of working with the writers in the mornings to like break story, working with the artists in like the afternoons to like go over, you know, the actual episodes. And then anytime that I'm not doing that, I'm rewriting scripts or I'm giving notes to the writers so they can rewrite scripts so we can have the next episode ready to go. Yeah.
And so you got your start being a story editor on She-Ra. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that you moved to head of...
Yeah. Because I had been staffed before at Warner Brothers. But yeah, She-Ra's the first time I had been promoted to head writer. Yeah.
Like, what was that like? I mean, because you're working in staff.
And yeah.
Next thing you know, you're running the show. Yeah. And you're very young.
Yeah.
And everybody managing people.
Yes. No, it was my first time managing. I mean, She-Ra was fun and special because it was a lot of people's first times doing things. Uh-huh. Like, it was Nate Stevenson's first time running a show. It was my first time being head writer. It was, you know, a couple of our like board artists and directors was some of their first times doing this. Like some of our designers was first time. So some of it was, I don't think we knew enough to be like scared or worried or anxious. We're just like, yeah, we're going to do this. It's going to be great. But it was fun because I had been part of the original sort of like small sort of mini pitch room that Nate had put together to like get the show like sort of greenlit by Netflix. And so like it was fun because like I and Nate had like been percolating some of these ideas since that moment. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I knew from that room, I was like, well, whatever iteration this is, I want to write Princess Prom. I want to do this. Like, so it was less scary than I thought it was going to be. And a little bit more natural of just like, oh yeah, like I know a lot of what Nate wants to do. Like, I know a lot of what, like I've suggested that's like here. So it was, once I actually became head writer, I think the biggest stumbling block was just realizing how much more writing you're going to do. Because you're not just writing your own episode, you're giving notes and helping rewrite every single episode. Mm-hmm. Everything that crosses your desk.
It kind of has to stay in the same tone and make sure it's all consistent.
Yeah. And so, you know, and again, I had like the writers do a lot of like sort of like really big changes. But yeah, you're like trying to make sure that it's consistent, especially on a serialized show. If something changes an episode, like 3 episodes down, that kind of changes something that might happen in the episode you're working on. So there's also a lot of continuity rewrites of like, okay, Swift One's not here yet, so we need to like rewrite this part real fast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just it was a lot more writing, but being able to bring all of the writers together and like chart out the journey and then like not just see it all come to life, but like bring it to the actors and seeing, especially like Amy Kuro and AJ Michalka, like lighting up when we're like in Catra and Adore are gonna get together, like, and he's like, yes, like it was, that's so fun. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did you ever have moments of doubt?
Oh yeah, for sure. There is definitely moments when, I mean, because every show hits rough points when you're like, there's always going to be an episode that doesn't quite work as smoothly as all the other ones. Like, it's, there's always going to be those, like, episodes where you're like, you give it your all, and, like, by the end, you're like, it's pretty decent.
I mean, it's not a movie. You're not taking years working. Yeah. So you got to keep going.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was going to say, my moments of doubt are pretty much, like, were connected to the fact that it was just a TV show. Like, you said, it's not a movie. Like, animated movies get reboarded and rewritten over and over and over and over again.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse, yeah. But, like, for years. Yeah. But, you know, we're producing just as much content, like, time-wise, but in we're producing hours of TV, but, like, in a much shorter time period. So, yeah, it's just sometimes you're, like, you do your best on an episode, but you're, like, I can't stay on this episode. I can't rework it the way it needs because we have to hit the next one. There's 52 episodes. We got to keep going. Mm-hmm. So you, like, very quickly learn what battles to fight and what things to let go of. And it's hard because sometimes, you know, you'll watch it and, like, nobody will notice the flaws but you. But, like, then you're like, no, but I know that we could have gotten a better performance or we could have done a better thing. But, yeah, it's just the nature of TV is just you just got to keep going. And sometimes an episode's not as good as it could be. But you've got, like, 20 more episodes coming down the pipeline, so you gotta keep moving.
Gotta move on.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And, of course, we're always more critical of our... We know that the inner guts and...
Yeah.
The 8-year-old kid at home is not going... Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. Like, there's no child who has, like, a whole map like Adora being like, hold on, I said in episode 13, you said this. But yeah.
You said your favorite food was...
Yeah. But now it's this. Yeah. Yeah,
that's so funny.
Yeah,
and so how did you vary? We're kind of working reverse chronologically here.
We're just going back in time.
We're going back in time.
But
you know, you graduated from Emerson. You had a degree in screenwriting, right?
Yep.
How did you get your first opportunity in the animation industry?
Yeah. Well, you know, I graduated, and I think you remember, then the Great Recession hit.
Oh, yes. Writer's strike of 2008,
and then right into the recession.
Great time.
Phenomenal time.
But
yeah.
Hey, nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, exactly.
Worked out good for you.
I know, right? So, I mean, there was, like, for a couple of years, I was, like, working as a PA. I was writing in my free time. I worked as, like...
PA for animation.
Just in general for music videos, actually. Music videos and commercials, because... Even during the recession, people wanted to make Oreo commercials. They want to make, like, lumber commercials. Like, it was just, like, commercials was, like, one of the only jobs in town for a while. And then I had continued writing and, you know, I'd done The Fringe with you. I was doing sketch comedy stuff. I was doing stand-up.
UCB.
And then a friend of mine who was working at Warner Brothers Animation and was assisting Alan Burnett, who is one of the head writer producers of Batman and the Animated Series back in the day. His resume is literally everything, like DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, just everything. Wow. He was working at Warner Bros. At the time. He was looking for people to pitch him Scooby-Doo stuff. My friend sent him my resume in my sample, and Alan loved it and started bringing me in on every single project he had to be like, pitch me things.
Uh-huh.
And so from that, I started freelancing at Warner Brothers. I did Teen Titans Go. I did Benicula. I helped do some development work with a friend who was an artist. And then as I was going, I got staffed on a very short-lived show called Right Now Kapow that was like a sketch comedy
that
show.
That was your first.
That was my first staff show, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Nate had called me up for She-Ra because I had actually known him from the early days of me doing like 50 different jobs to try to make ends meet. And one of those jobs was entertainment journalist. So I had interviewed Nate for like a site called CBR that we were like running his stories about like, you know, comic books, and he was working on Nimona. So we had known each other from that like interview onwards. And so when Nate got the chance to be like working on She-Ra, he was like, Hey, do you want to come in on the mini room? Like, what's your availability? Mm-hmm. So like, he was the one who like brought me on, and it was fantastic. But yeah, my very first job in animation was pitching Scooby-Doo DVDs to Alan Burnett over at Warner Brothers.
We love our Scooby-Doo.
I tell my writers, you know that you're a solid, like, you're just going to be doing animation writing for the rest of your life when you've been called in for a Scooby-Doo. Because everybody gets called in for a Scooby-Doo eventually. Somebody is going to give you a Scooby-Doo script eventually. It's going to happen. Yeah.
Just keep them coming. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
10 years and quite...
Yeah.
What a journey it's been.
Yeah, it's been a lot. It's been fun. I think 8-year-old me would have like died to know that this was my trajectory of like, you're writing cartoons, you're writing Superman. It's great. Yeah. There's dinosaurs. You love it. Yeah.
So also your husband.
Yes.
Marley.
Yes.
Is also deep in the well of animation.
Yes.
How does that work for the two of you guys?
Mm. Well, it's funny because he's now finally left Warner Brothers after 15 years and he's doing some freelance work now, but it's been, some of it is good because you can bounce ideas off of each other as writers. Mm. Or like, you know, there's definitely been times where I'm working on things. I'm like, I don't understand why this character isn't popping. Like, mm. like I can't wrap my head around it. And like Marley would be like, oh, well, they don't have any agency. Like, you know, here's like, you know, like some suggestions. Or I'll do the same thing where he's like, I don't know how I should structure this. I'm like, oh, have you seen this or done this? So that part's fun. And then the other part is like, just kind of weird is like so much of our careers have like weirdly mirrored each other mm. of like, you know, when I was on She-Ra, he was working on Thundercats Roar, like, and he was the writer producer for that. Yes. When like, yeah, when, you know, I was working on Camp Cretaceous, he was working on Flintstones spinoff, the Pebbles and Bam Bam, like spinoff, uh-huh. Yabba Dabba Dinos. I was on Superman when he was working on Aquaman. So it's also very funny wow. of just like, the two of us are just like exchanging like comic books with each other and being like, mm. all right, so here's the Peter David Aquaman for you. And you're giving me Death of Superman for me. And aww. We're taking them to our offices. Like, so yeah. So for the most part, it's nice because we both know the industry. We both know a lot of the same people. We've hired a lot of the same people. Uh-huh. So it's like an informal network of, you know, like his Marley's old assistant, like became my assistant. And then, you know, sometimes it's hard because you can never take that part of your brain out. And you're just like, oh, we have not left work at work. It's here at home. Uh-huh. We're all like talking shop you're all like, the time.
Oh, you're like wine tasting and like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Out of story.
Yeah. So we gotta like be like, okay, no. Now we're at home and we're not gonna talk about like, you know, whatever like superhero thing we're working on right now. We're gonna like talk about politics or like go take a walk or something.
Would you guys ever pitch something together?
You know, we've talked about it. I think the funniest thing and this goes along with Everybody Does a Scooby-Doo. We've actually co-written some Scooby-Doo scripts together.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we co-wrote some Be Cool Scooby-Doo scripts, including a script, I Scooby-Dooby-Doo, that takes place at a wedding while we were planning our wedding. So
no way.
Yeah, 100%.
Wait, is it out?
It's out. Yeah. So yeah, the episode is, and also like the two characters getting married are Nate and Kimmy. And like, I have friends who call me Cammy, and Marley's middle name is Nathaniel Nate. So we were like named it after ourselves. So we rewrote, co-wrote an episode about getting married while we were getting married.
Wow.
Yeah.
B-roll editor. That's a B-roll of that. Wow,
yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. So what's next for you?
Yeah.
Superman's about mm-hmm. to come out. Hopefully there'll be some fun Comic-Con-y type things.
I hope. Yeah. They don't tell us like what is going to be at Comic-Con until like right before.
Yes,
so,
right.
You know, I'll keep my fingers crossed. But yeah, no, Superman's coming out. I've actually been in non-animation. I've been writing some comics for DC Comics. So I was writing, I wrote a mini series with this character, Mary Marvel, who's like, if anybody's seen the Shazam movie, she's in it. She's like Billy's uh-huh. sister. So I wrote like a mini series about her, like, trying to like go to college, but also be a superhero. Mm-hmm. And then cool. coming out in like July, and I think August, July, I think in August is, I wrote Wonder Woman, which is super fun. DC's doing this big event that they've announced called Night Terrors, where like everybody in the DC universe is dealing with like, like basically kind of like Freddy Krueger style uh-huh. horror, where like there's nightmares coming to life. And so I got to write the 2-issue Wonder Woman portion of that event where Wonder Woman's facing off against her worst fears while trying to like unite like the Justice League Dark to save the day. Wow. And it's so fun. Juan Ferreira is the artist and his art is so beautiful and so creepy at the same time. So yeah, so that stuff's coming out. Superman is coming out in July. And then after that...
Any word on future mm-hmm. Superman action?
So we got, and this was announced way back, because we had gotten picked up for 20 episodes. The first season is about 10 episodes. Next season after that is 10 episodes. And then after that, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we can't wait to see more from you, Josie.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Yay, good to see you.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next week for more Alice in Wonderland. Bye. Oh, no.
Thanks for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Allison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.allisonpackard.com. See you next week.